The Congressional Spotlight on Federal News Radio is presented by AT&T, investing in its network today to connect America's small businesses to the dreams of tomorrow. AT&T, your world delivered.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Covey. Glad to have you with us today, and we're going to have an interesting show. I think particularly interesting because we're going a little off the beaten path here. We are going to deal with pay and benefits later on when we talk about the Thrift Savings Plan. But today I'm going to be talking with Brian Lowry, and he has he actually wears two hats. He is, and let me get his title here. Brian, you are president of the American Federation of Government Employees Council of Prison Locals. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you're also a working federal correctional officer. Is that right?
That is correct.
So were you literally wearing two hats? And the subject today, I just doing a little research on this, I was astounded to learn that there are 211,000 people in the federal prison system. These are inmates. There are 39,000 employees of the Bureau of Prisons. And, Brian, how many people actually work inside these prisons and institutions?
Well, these prisons are designed with a complement that usually is based around a security level of that prison facility, low, medium, high security, and it varies. But each prison in itself probably has roughly 325 and upwards, depending on security level of employees in each facility.
Well, that doesn't seem like much, given the fact that you're what, obviously working three shifts?
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So that's you're talking about, in theory, 100 people, a little more or less, in each shift, huh?
Well, that's not necessarily true. There are so many variances in jobs, details, and duties, programming, and things that go on inside of a prison. Probably the majority of staff are assigned to the day watch hour, somewhere between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., and then you would have probably somewhere about, I don't know, upwards from about 6 p.m. to about 9 p.m., about 35 staff in an institution that could have anywhere, depending on security level, again, about 1,200 inmates to about 1,800 inmates, about 35 up until about 9 p.m., and then some other positions will go home other than corrections, and then anywhere from about 9 p.m. to about 6 o'clock in the morning, you could run anywhere from 13 staff to about 25 or 30, depending on security level.
Okay, sure, that makes sense that it's not evenly divided, obviously, because of the nighttime. Brian, everybody has seen prison movies, and some people have actually been into a prison or a facility. I talked to Tom Timmon and Amy Morris earlier. We were promoting the show, and Amy has been in a women's minimum security prison, and I think one other. Tom Timmon has been in several, including Lewisburg and Allentown, and the D.C. jail when it was actually located in the District of Columbia. I've been in, again, on a tour of state prison, a federal prison, and Guantanamo Bay, the facility there. But, you know, all of us were day people. We were there on scared straight trips, or we were there as reporters or whatnot. Can you take us through what life is like in prison for both the prisoners and for the correctional officers?
All right, I'll start with the inmates first. Life inside of a prison, prisoners are there because that is their punishment for violating the laws of the land. A lot of crimes these days, and a lot of people see prisons as being these white-collar criminals, these federal prisons having white-collar criminals, tax evasion, and other sort of things. It's not necessarily the case today. A lot of these violent crimes, probably over the last 10 or 15 years, have been changed by law from a state crime to a federal crime, which means that we have more violent, more predatory, more aggressive, more gun-related charge-type crimes that now these inmates do federal sentencing instead of states. So it's actually taken our system to a younger, more aggressive population. And with that comes gang orientation, inmates belonging to more gang associations inside there, mainly in the beginning for their own protection, but then also part of these gangs who also barter trade inside of prisons. prisons are like their own little communities. The public really doesn't have a general understanding of what really goes on, but it's a society within itself that there's so many different things and so much different makeup of what staff do, from staff who counsel inmates, work on sentence computations. You have education programs. You have a hospital inside of the prison. You have maintenance features. Of course, all inmates are required to work unless their medical conditions otherwise state, and at that, it functions on its own. But prisons in today's world are very violent places. Over probably the last 5 years, statistically through Inspector General reports, violent situations that have occurred, disturbances, riot-type situations, assaults with weapons, whether it be on inmates or on staff, have risen about 15.5% to 16%, the number of incidents year to year. So these are very aggressive places, and not only do the inmates live on edge, but then it also affects the well-being and the psyche of staff as well, because each incident that occurs, your federal prison makeup is a little different than most of your state makeup. Most of your state makeup, the security force and the responders are generally considered to be correctional officers. All the other staff in state facilities are considered to be support staff, and if something major happens inside of one of these state facilities, they really get the support staff out of there, and you really have more correctional staff. And we call it ratios, inmate-to-staff ratios, and in corrections, there are more correctional officers in the state that respond. It's not that way in the federal system. In the federal system, all of our staff are considered law enforcement officers, and they're all responsible and obligated to respond to any incident. So you could take a secretary, you could take an accountant, a teacher, you could take a nurse, or anybody in that type of job, and they're considered law enforcement first, so they have to respond. You have any number of incidents which occur every single day in the 33 prisons that are located in the United States, and of course we have one in Puerto Rico too, but you can take these staff, and every day they're expected to either respond, not knowing what they're going into, some type of violence, all in the interest to protect the secure and orderly running of the facility, and to ensure that they do everything possible to limit the serious injury to staff or even prevent the loss of life.
You know, I'm surprised when you said that they're required to work unless they have a medical reason, because, again, the movies and things we see, it looks like everybody is exercising all the time.
Well, we only have so many different details and duties that we can assign inmates, and at times inmates are going to be idle for one reason or another, and when they generally are, usually during a day watch going into the early hours of the evening, inmates, when they are not at work or required to report somewhere for a program or some type of appointment, generally have free time where they can go out onto the yard. But in the evening times, you have less inmates working, and the majority of your population actually could be out on the yard exercising.
It's also interesting when you said that, you know, the public perception is that federal prisons are for white-collar criminals and, you know, fraud, counterfeiting, that kind of thing. But you say you're getting a younger, more violent group of inmates because, I mean, is this because crime is up, or is it because the laws have changed and they've made state, what were formerly state charges, they federalized them?
Well, prosecutions are up in the United States, period, especially in the federal sector, and I believe in the proposed 2011 budget that there are actually 50 more positions proposed for prosecutors to prosecute these crimes, ranging from all types of violent crimes to RICO violations and other type of violent incidents where guns are used, drugs involved, and that sort of thing.
Well, you mentioned RICO, and I know that is that gave law enforcement, I'm told, added tools to fight organized crime, and now I guess it's being used in Homeland Security. What is the RICO?
RICO is crimes associated with affiliation of an organized group that do all kinds of variant type things to run illegal business. It could be part of a business that, first of all, could be something where they avoid tax evasion, run business for violent entities, drug-related crimes, and that sort of thing.
Okay, so let me interrupt you here, Brian, if we can. We'll resume in a minute. We're talking with Brian about the federal prison system. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
In the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Here's Dr. Doug Fridsma, Acting Director of Interoperability and Standards, HHS, on the Federal Executive Forum on Health IT, sponsored by CA Technologies.
Up until about 6 months ago, I was a practicing physician. I would like to see a world in which when a provider goes in to see a patient and they have to choose between their stethoscope and their health information technology, that they see it as the critical piece of taking good care of patients.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How do you keep your infrastructure safe without limiting your people and productivity? CA Technologies let you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems. Can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you enforce defense in detail, not just defense in depth? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems? With CA Technologies, you can. To learn how, visit ca.com/security.
Hey, Lisa, how's it going?
Good, thanks. I'm just getting ready for our summer vacation.
Nice.
Yeah, but I'm a little worried about recent crime stories I've heard and whether or not the house will be safe.
I felt that way, too, until we switched to Ackerman Security Systems.
Ackerman?
Yeah, not only is it one of the largest security companies in the country with more than 40 years' experience, but when you switch to Ackerman, you pay just $18.95 a month.
$18.95?
That's right. Also, there's no cost to switch, and you can use your existing equipment. Turns out peace of mind can come at a reasonable price.
Whether you want a new system with the latest technology or you want to switch to reliable monitoring for just $18.95 a month, call 1-888-999-1070. That's 1-888-999-1070. Or visit AckermanSecurity.com. Join the more than 180,000 people who enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. And as an added bonus for federal employees, when you make the switch, the first 4 months of your home monitoring service are free.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Wednesday edition of the Dorabeck Insider. The Defense Department looking to cut its own budget. We'll talk to an expert about 5 steps to put the Pentagon on a sustainable path. And telework, we've been talking about telework for years, yet still only a small percentage of you actually telework. Why? We'll talk to the authors of Making Telework Work. All that and more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Brian Lowry. He is both a federal correctional officer, and he is also president of the American Federation of Government Employees Council of Prison Locals. And we're getting a look at life on the inside in prison, and it is not very much like it's billed as in the movies. Brian, I saw happened to see the movie Bugsy last night on cable television, and it was about Bugsy Benjamin Siegel, who some people say he's one of the men that invented Las Vegas or created it, but he was killed in a mafia hit a mafia hit at his home in Los Angeles. But when he did a short term in prison, it showed him literally in a smoking jacket, being served dinner. His wife or girlfriend came in, and they had catered dinner with chafing dishes and whatnot. What's the likelihood of that being true?
Well, there is no truth to that, and for ratings and for getting people out to the movies or interest in watching these, a lot of the facts are tainted in there. As we were talking about before the break here, you know, the RICO Act was created based on, you know, what you're saying about this movie and things dealing with the mafia or mafiosos. And a lot of these crimes have been extended through recent changes in the law. But most of these people that are in jail for these type of charges or extortion, bribery, illegal drug sales, murder, and that sort of thing. So instead of, you know, as you refer to this type of crime or this type of person here, things have changed where, you know, any type of gang affiliation, association, group association could be considered part of RICO if it's, you know, for the interest of a specific group.
And also, they can seize the assets and that kind of thing
under RICO?
Correct. And are they using this for Homeland Security cases?
I believe Homeland Security has some involvement in this, tracking, identifying groups, affiliates, and that sort of thing, yes.
When these people are found guilty or plead guilty to being involved in terrorist plots, and whether it's the shoe bomber or the underwear bomber we had, and, you know, we trivialize these things in the media, but those could have been very serious incidents had they pulled them off. Do these people go to federal prisons, or do they go to a state facility, or is there a special place for them?
Well, as what we're talking about under RICO violations, I would say probably most of them end up in a federal facility today.
Now, Aldrich Ames, the CIA spy, and Robert Hansen, the FBI spy, do you know where they are now?
I do not know where they are.
Okay, I think they're both under what do they call it, 23-hour a day lockdown.
If they are, they're probably under some special management or in some special management unit in the Bureau of Prisons, or they're locked down for their protection.
Okay. Suppose someone is found guilty, sent to a federal prison, maybe one you're familiar with, and I guess you've been to many, if not most of them. What happens from day one when they go in?
Well, from day one, they actually are then processed into the prison facility, and they're identified based on their crime, based on the time that they received that they have to serve. Then they'll be classified of what security level that they're going to go to. Then they'll be processed and placed for designation into a certain facility. If that facility is not close to where they are, they'll probably go in transit to a some type of transfer facility, and then they'll be moved to that location. Once they arrive there, they're then processed into there. If they don't have anything that's going to restrict them to go into general population, they would go into general population. If there's other things in their background where we either have to be concerned about their potential escape risk or their potential ability to be violent or then they have what we call separatees, to where, you know, you can't really put them in an open population with inmates who may pose a threat to them. They could be locked up, like you say, for 23 hours a day, which in most of our prisons, we have what's called a special housing unit, and in those we keep inmates either for disciplinary reasons locked up, or sometimes for safety reasons to the inmate, or safety reasons that may involve staff locked down. And the 23 hours means that 1 hour, usually about 5 days a week, they're allowed to go outside into a secluded recreation cage to at least get some fresh air and some recreation.
So these people, I guess, are given this 23-hour lockdown either because they pose a danger, maybe because of the nature of the crime and the plea bargain, or maybe because the general population poses a danger to them, huh?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you know, we hear, again, anecdotally and every now and then you'll read in the papers about sex crimes in prison, rapes and what kind of, that sort of thing. How prevalent is this? I mean, obviously you wouldn't know every incident or maybe even most of them, but is what's going on there?
Well, there have been congressional groups that have been put together to investigate prison rapes. There was a commission that was put together by Congress that did studies over about a 4 to 5 year period. It was a prison rape elimination commission, and really verbiage to that, they were called PREA, and it was a law designed to, it was actually identified as a Prison Rape Elimination Act. There are a series of incidents that occur in a federal prison, such as a prison rape. And a lot of these are gang-affiliated type things, I believe, that occur in prison. A lot of them are based on threats, either to that person or have some type of situation occur to where there is some sort of prostitution. Percentage-wise, it goes on inside these prisons. But we do everything we can to eliminate those factors out of there to try to ensure that we have good general supervision, and we use sound correctional management to lower that risk as much as possible. And that's, as we talked about, gang affiliation and that sort of thing. That's sometimes why inmates probably try to belong to a group instead of go it alone. And you come into prison saying you're going to do your own time and you don't want to be involved in anything, but then there's a threat or a fear for your own safety.
Are the gangs, you know, we get the impression that they're divided along racial or ethnic lines. You might have the Aryan Nation or some neo-Nazi group. You might have a Black Power group, and you might have a Hispanic group. Is that the way it breaks down?
I would say that is generally the trend for the most part.
So when you go in for your own safety, you sort of automatically gravitate to whatever group will accept you, huh?
Whichever one will accept you or whichever one approaches you.
Yeah, okay. Listen, yeah. We need to take a short break, Brian, if you can stick with us. We'll be right back talking to Brian Lowry about life in federal prisons. Right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from July 23rd, 2010. The G fund is unchanged at $13.35. The F fund loses 0.02 at $14.12. The C fund is up 0.11 at $13.21. The S fund rises 0.31 at $17.49. And the I fund gains 0.24 at $17.53. Your L funds all higher. The 2010 up 0.03 at $15.48. The 2020 up 0.10 also at $15.48. The 2030 rises 0.12 at $15.60. The 2040 is up 0.15 at $15.75. And the L income gains 0.03 at $14.12. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you've been around Washington as long as I have, you know the one constant is change. The players change, laws change. If you're a federal retiree or soon to be one, you need to know that some of those changes could affect your retirement future. There's one association fighting to make sure that doesn't happen, and that's NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. If you work for or have worked for Uncle Sam, you need NARF. NARF is the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. Or call them at 800-627-3394, 800-627-3394, and have them send you more information.
FLIR Systems has a singular focus on providing thermal imaging night vision systems for search and rescue, surveillance, and force protection across the globe. We proudly support the men and women who serve, defend, and protect by providing leading-edge technology to enhance mission success. Today, customers trust in FLIR Systems' thermal imaging products and rely on our responsive support worldwide. Visit FLIR.com/GS for more details. FLIR Systems, extraordinary vision for extraordinary heroes.
You're an agent of change, making changes for the better in the face of shrinking budgets and expanding expectations. Amplify your agency's possibilities with unified communication solutions from Verizon that enable you to securely and reliably work where you work best, at a kitchen table or an office abroad. Change your team into a dynamic, interactive 24/7 think tank with our collaboration solutions and BlackBerry Bold smartphones, and transform smaller budgets into bigger successes. So while demands are rising and funds are declining, you can address both with powerful, global mobile voice and data solutions from Verizon. Find out how you can make your teams even more powerful and effective at verizonwireless.com/gov or by calling 1-800-293-3048. Verizon. Rule the air.
The Intelligence and National Security Report is brought to you by ManTech International Corporation.
ManTech has been providing IT services and solutions to the Air Force for more than 25 years, and they intend to deliver innovative and worldwide support to the upcoming NetSense 2 contract. They provide a full spectrum of net-centric services, including service-oriented architecture enterprise solutions, web service development, cybersecurity, network operations, and sustainment support. ManTech has been named one of the top 100 IT companies in the world by Business Week magazine.
Due to the high demand for ManTech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. Apply for openings today at ManTech.com. That's ManTech.com. ManTech, leading the convergence of national security and technology.
Hi, I'm Rynthia Rost from GEICO. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington have been in our community more than 80 years. To ensure that the youth of today will be full partners in a better tomorrow, give a child the gift of a membership for 2010. And while you're at it, reach out and volunteer to mentor a child in your community. Go to www.bgcgw.org and tell them the GEICO sent you. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Brian Lowry. He is president of the American Federation of Government Employees Prison Locals, and he is also himself a correctional guard. So he's been there, done that, and knows the sort of the national scope, not just one particular prison. Brian, at the first half of the show, we were talking about the prisoners themselves. You said they're getting younger, they're getting more violent, you have more gang activity, it's incidents of violence in the prisons are happen all the time to the prisoners. How about to the guards?
Just this year alone, and Mike, we track our data as a union through our national office. We track data from reports from various institutions. Our statistics would be lower than what the agency may even know because I have to rely on these other locals to report the data. But just this year alone in 2010, we have had approximately 104 staff assaulted by inmates without weapons and about 24 staff assaulted by inmates with weapons. We've also had 15 inmate homicides inside of our prisons this year alone.
I'm sorry, how many inmate homicides?
15.
15. And again, as you say, this is data coming from your union locals, and it would probably be, the numbers would probably be higher on what the Bureau of Prisons itself has officially, huh?
Well, I believe the inmate homicide rate is accurate, but I also believe that our numbers on assaults on staff are actually lower than what the real numbers would actually say.
When I went to Guantanamo Bay, It was a one-day trip, and we saw what they wanted us to see. But they had a number of prison facilities there. They were literally state-of-the-art. They had been modeled on the best, if you can call it that, federal prisons in the U.S. and taken down there and assembled. And the inmates, or the detainees, I guess is the term they use, the detainees wore different colored jumpsuits, different uniforms, and this was based on their threat level as assessed by the military guard force there. In federal prisons, everybody dresses alike, correct?
Well, the general population would pretty much dress alike, and then if you have inmates who are locked up in our special housing unit, and we refer to that as our jail inside the prison, they would have different colored clothing on, as well as any other special program where inmates are locked down. They would be identified by different colored clothing.
Okay, so you literally could tell, if to a trained eye, you could tell the potential
threat level. Who belongs where?
Yeah,
correct.
Okay, oh, you're right. Good point. Okay, we talked about the prisoners, understandably. How about, and you? I think you mentioned earlier that everybody in the federal prison system, that everybody is considered a law enforcement officer?
Yes, sir.
So if a secretary or a psychiatrist or somebody came in, that are they're doubling as a law enforcement officer?
They are. We all receive training at Glencoe, Georgia, for a 3-week period, and at that point, everybody is trained the same. And no matter what your primary duty, your first duty is to the security orderly running of the institution, and you're considered to be a first responder. There are only a couple of positions that would be exempt from that, which would be like chaplains and that sort of thing, but everybody else from the secretaries to the accountants to the teachers to the health services staff, they're all considered first responders.
So it's like the Marine Corps. Everybody's basic job is a rifleman in the Marine Corps. And in this case, whatever your job is in the bureau, in the prison, you're at heart a law enforcement officer.
Correct.
When people go to work for the Bureau of Prisons, at the, you know, the federal prisons, how are they different from other federal employees? Are you considered LEOs, that is, law enforcement officers, for retirement purposes?
Yes.
Okay. So how does that work then? A normal federal worker, under the FERS system, there's a variety of levels, but typically speaking, it's 55 with 30 years, I think 60 with 20 years, or 62 at age 62 with 5 years. How does it work for people in the prison system and LEOs in general?
20-year retirement based on age of 50 or 25 years before 50 and mandatoried out at 57 years old, unless you're considered to be non-law enforcement, and that may be that you hired on to the Bureau and you work at a location outside of an institution.
So you're out at 57 in most cases, and I guess that's the same for air traffic controllers and other federal
Border Patrol, and that sort of thing. Yes.
People here in the staff here at WFED have been asking me questions and suggesting things to ask you. And one of them is someone asked how about the burnout rate. It's got to be, I mean, this has got to be a job where if you're on shift for 8 hours, you're under considerable stress for 8 hours a day.
Being inside of a prison is a very stressful job, not knowing what's going to happen next, and each day when you put your uniform on and you report to work, not knowing the unknown. Prisons are very can turn very quickly, and the violence can escalate at any second once something occurs. A lot of times it's known as a factor where the hair could stand up on the back of your neck, not knowing who has what weapon, what weapons are inside the prisons. Inmates can make a weapon even out of the simplest things such as toothbrushes, any kind of hardened plastic or metal, anything they could access. You can't totally eliminate all factors of what they could make weapons out of or what these gangs are going to do next. The sad state is that we've taken most things away by law of what inmates could access. We've taken away the abilities to buy weights at new prisons, although existing ones that have been operational for years. And I would say that probably 50% of our current prisons are probably older than 25 years. They maintain if those weights are used at any time in any violent situation, they'll be removed from there, and then they'll go to aerobic-type equipment that they allow the inmates to use. But other than that, inmates can manufacture weapons out of anything, and we've taken the weights away from them. Inmates are no longer allowed to smoke inside of prisons, and although staff can, inmates cannot, so we've taken that away. We've reduced their ability to sexual-type books, literature, magazines, that sort of thing. But inside the prisons, there is still, whenever you house inmates in a restricted space, as many as we do, because our prisons are over overrated capacity, and we say, you know, that's just a word to say that we're overcrowded.
Brian, let me interrupt you there, because I've got some questions about the privileges that are being denied and why when we come back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Solutions Report provided by Aon Consulting.
A well-crafted health management program leads to healthy employees, increased productivity, and decreased healthcare costs. But most health programs lack the continuity needed to be as effective and efficient as possible. Aon Consulting offers benchmarking tools to measure the design and operation of your health management and lost time programs. With Aon's health and productivity value-based assessment, your organization will be on the road to a healthy culture and successful program.
Aon Consulting partners with leading employers worldwide to turn strategies into success. With its vast federal and commercial experience, Aon Consulting provides solutions and best practices to help your agency be more efficient, improve delivery, and achieve its goals. With new leadership and new missions, federal agencies need support now more than ever. By engaging its national network of unmatched talent, innovation, and operational excellence, Aon Consulting delivers distinct value to its clients.
To learn more, visit aonfederal.com. That's aonfederal.com. The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Brian Lowry. He is a correctional guard with the federal prison system, and he's also president of the American Federation of Government Employees Council of Prison Locals. So he gets around and not only knows his facility, but he gets around the country and sees all of them. Brian, fascinating when you were talking about the privileges, the weapons and the privileges and whatnot. So did I get this right? If that in prisons that have weights, like free weights, we see people pumping iron, they can keep them and use them if they're not used for any weapons purpose. Is that right?
That's correct.
But if they are used use a prison term, a shank or a club or something out of it, then they go away and the prisoners know that.
They do know that, and we have had no incidents in these prisons that have had the remaining free weights inside those facilities.
Right, and in the newer facilities, you said that they're installing aerobic equipment, or they're putting in aerobic equipment. Is that because it's cheaper, because it's safer, or what's the reason for that?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. We talked earlier about the majority of the inmates work unless they have medical restrictions. We try to do our very best in managing our population to keep them busy and to keep them from remaining idle. And that means we expect everybody to hold a job or that they do some kind of programming inside the prisons, whether it's educational or vocational, as well as we give them the abilities to work off some of their stress factors too, such as being able to go to the yards, walk a track. We have organized sports type things on the recreation yards, such as softball, soccer, that sort of thing. And the ones not interested in that, give them the ability to also use treadmills or other type stuff. Because we believe if they're putting their time into something like that, then their time is not being put towards something that could be a security risk or a problem to other inmates or staff.
Well, I could see the boredom factor would be dangerous, too, in addition to letting off steam. And you say that the prisons, the federal prisons, no longer allow, like a magazine like Playboy, they can't get that anymore?
That is correct.
And what about these movies we see of jails with the pinups on the wall? Would you see that today in a federal prison?
You should not see that inside of a prison.
Very interesting. And they can't smoke?
No, all the facilities now, it is illegal for inmates to possess tobacco.
Was there a reason for that? I mean, political correctness and health issues aside, was there a reason for banning smoking?
You know, there are a lot of different varying opinions of why this went into place and that we took that ability for them to smoke away. I would say some of it may be due to health costs associated with us having to spend the money for inmates and health factors. I would say that's probably the biggest contributor into the hundreds of millions of dollars for health care on inmates a year. So I would say that's probably your biggest contributing factor.
All right, and it's not a punishment or a political correctness thing. How about and I know when we were talking off air, I had a friend, and I knew, of course, I knew this woman, and I knew her daughter. Her daughter was a nurse, and she worked at a hospital which was very near a federal prison. And she said, the daughter said that many of the nurses' husbands were correctional officers at this facility. And that she said there had been instances where the inmates would pull the jacket of the officer, find out maybe where they lived, but certainly how long they had to go. And then before the guy retired, they would kill him. And is this an urban myth?
With technology the way it is today, I believe some of these inmates are very sophisticated, and then you can take probably former inmates, family members, associates on the outside. Inmates make idle threats to staff, and we take all the threats that inmates make to staff on a daily basis very serious. But there have been some pretty serious threats made to the safety of staff and or staff's family members, and it probably today would be easy to know the officer's name and to be able to do a so-called Google search and find out information about that individual, where they live, and so forth and so on. So with technology increasing in today's time, I think that they probably could act on that if they were willing to.
When I went to Guantanamo Bay, struck by a number of things, in addition to the massive nature of it, one of the things is, as I said earlier, the prisoners were dressed in, the detainees were dressed in different colored jumpsuits depending on their perceived level of threat level and escape level and whatnot. They were housed in different facilities. In some cases, they could eat together. In others, they had to eat separately. But the guards, I noticed, and these were all military people, the name tags that the military normally wears up on the upper left-hand part of the shoulder, they would have fictitious names. I mean, some of them would say Donald Duck or the Phantom or whatnot, but they were afraid that the detainees would somehow get their names and addresses and maybe do harm to their loved ones. And many of the guards also had plastic shields over their face. They looked like giant guards that goalies have in hockey, but they extended down from the top of the head down to the neck. And the reason for that was there had been several instances, they said, where the detainees would get a container, fill it with water, soap, human waste, every kind of bodily fluid known to man, make sort of a cocktail of it, if you will, and then they would splash some of it on the floor then they would call, they'd pretend to fight, and when the guards rushed in, they had it ready to throw this in the guards' faces. And this is why they wore the masks. Is it like that in a federal prison?
That does happen, and it is something that is too much of a reality that occurs probably in one of our facilities or several during any week period that goes by.
Very good. Brian, listen, thank you so much for being here with us. We're going to get you to come back on. It's fascinating.
I appreciate the time that you gave me this morning. Understand the public should know that our staff are unarmed when they're inside prisons. We don't carry any weapons. All we have is a body alarm radio on us, and there's no protection like other state entities or local entities who carry pepper spray, tasers, batons. The majority of our institutions, our staff are unarmed, and it's a very dangerous place.
Brent, if you could stick around after the break, I have one more question for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Here's Dr. Stephen Ondra, Senior Health Advisor to the Secretary, VA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Health IT, sponsored by McAfee.
I think that as health IT helps transform healthcare in this country, health IT itself will also be transformed. I don't believe that the way we're looking at health IT today is going to be the way that we use it and tools that we have tomorrow.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Federal IT organizations and prime contractors are experiencing a rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to keeping federal agencies ahead of the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, please call 1-888-VIRUS-NO or go to McAfee.com/government.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more.
This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to 23-year seafood veteran Chef Tony's, quality seafood, creative preparations, affordable prices.
Foxfire Grill, a family restaurant specializing in American cuisine and personalized service. And Studio 355 Hair and Day Spa in North Bethesda. Award-winning stylists combine cutting-edge style with relaxation.
See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
When it comes to buying software that's cyber safe, you need to trust but verify. Here's Rich Marshall, Director of Global Cybersecurity Management at Homeland Security.
Make sure you have confidence in both your vendor and your software producer. Just because the software comes from overseas does not by definition make it suspect. But we know from experience that some software vendors produce their software overseas, and it's laden with a lot of vulnerabilities.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causing. I've been lucky enough today to have Brian Lowry with us. He is a correctional facilities guard in the federal prison system, and he's also president of the American Federation of Government Employees Council of Prison Locals. And Brian, thanks for giving us so much time here. A number of questions, and people keep popping in and asking me things. I know you have, as a union, AFG has concerns about staffing and something about Unicor.
Unicor.
Can you explain what Unicor is?
Unicor is Federal Prison Industries. It is a culmination of you could somewhat say a business model that actually we go out and do contracts for different types of things, such as refurbishing vehicle for other government entities, textiles, making anywhere from uniforms to shirts to T-shirts to BDUs, boots, helmets, that sort of thing. And it's non-appropriated funding.
Okay, so these it pays for itself, and I guess the government is one of your clients too, correct?
The government, in the most part, is, and DOD being one of our bigger clients.
Right, and at one point, I believe desks and chairs and things like that were made by Unicor.
Furniture as well, and it is still produced in some of our factories.
Okay, and what's the problem as AFGE sees it about Unicor?
Well, the problem with Unicor is simple. Unicor is a business. All the salaries, whether it be of the staff or the inmates, the operations, the supplies, the overhead costs, all has to be done as a business model. If it doesn't make money, it's not going to be effective. There have been restrictions that have been put on Unicor over the last couple of decades, with them being more restricted probably in the last 10 years than ever before, that we can only sell a certain percentage of our product lines to any given entity. Because of the competition it could create with private sector business to take jobs away and that sort of thing. But Unicor is one of these things we've used for many years in our prisons that we think, number one, reduces idleness inside of our prisons, keeps inmates busy, pays them a very minimal salary, at the most $1 an hour, to work in these factories, and it teaches inmates skills, it reduces recidivism rates. These inmates use this money for all kinds of different purposes, to include some of it that they can send back out to their families as like child support or support type payments. And go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. So obviously you believe this is a good thing, and provides, I guess, on the job training for a lot of people. Where's the push coming from to wrap this up? And getting a signal to wrap it up too from Dorothy Ruminski. So listen, Brian, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show. Been fascinating, educating, and let's keep in touch.
My pleasure, anytime. Thank you.
Brian Lowry, he's the president of the American Federation of Government Employees, Council of Prison Locals, and himself a federal correctional guard. So appreciate you being with us today. If you missed any of the show, want to hear it again, we are archived on our webpage, and you can listen to us at your leisure and tell a friend about it. We'll be back next week, and we'll be getting back to the realm of pay and benefits. Have a good week.
Truth about federal telework. Learn what you and your agency need to know at the Telework Center at federalnewsradio.com, keyword telework, sponsored by Tanberg, now a part of Cisco.
If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the retirement and health benefits of federal employees, NARF wants you to know that laws can change and so can your retirement security. Protect it by joining NARF, the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. That's www.narfe.org. Or call 1-800-627-3394 and ask them to send you some information. Join now. NARF, your best retirement investment.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Attention AFGE members, government, and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. Purchase any laptop from July 15th through August 15th and receive a free custom skin. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com.